Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. Thou thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream. At that location, you can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. Or you can download the TuneIn Radio app. The TuneIn Radio app is a free app to any of your devices. And then at search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that Facebook search engine, you can type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs. On Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 8:07 here on this, I guess, a little rainy Friday night in the city of Philadelphia. And we're in Freestyle Friday mode here on Time for an Awakening. Our Friday edition is always an open forum. Tonight we have some special guests joining us. It's several race first rallies. That'll be going on next month simultaneously. Several representatives from the different cities is on with us this evening to talk about the rallies in their cities and some related issues related to our communities and what we need to do as a people to move closer together. We'll be in conversation tonight with our special guests, and you can join that conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and it's 8:12 here in the city of Philadelphia. Before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia, 7th and R Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm, you know, just rolling with the wave right now, and looking forward to having, you know, to see what the discussion will be in relationship to. I was looking over the elements for the Race First Awareness Week and the picnic, and I'm really liking what I see as far as what they're asking us to do. So glad to be a part of that discussion to, you know, help other people, you know, of the Time for Awakening audience get involved. I think it's important. So, and besides other things that's just going on in general.
You know, last year when we had Brother Obi and Brother Imhotep out of Baltimore, when he had the Racehorse Rally last year, and we talked about different things about our people networking and trying to facilitate these things in other cities. And then we turn around now, and it has spread to 4 or 5, at least 4 and potential 5 locations around the country, Columbus, Ohio, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Shreveport, Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken, in Philadelphia. I'm anxious to hear from some of the other folks from the other areas of the country to kind of talk about the situations there, the commonalities that we have going on, and the things that we need to work on as a people to bring things closer together. What I'm going to do, I'm going to bring Brother Obi on to kind of start things out. I don't think Baba Imhotep would be with us this evening. Richard, I think he got caught up in a couple of prior engagements going on, but it's enough brothers and sisters on the line that's going to be able to carry the conversation. So let's go to Brother Obi here in the city of Philadelphia. Brother Obi, how are you, sir?
Peace, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. What's going on?
Oh, everything's all right, brother.
Yes, sir. We just got word a couple hours ago from Baba Imhotep that he had another engagement as far as another interview promoting the Racehorse Rally that he had made a commitment to and couldn't get out of that commitment. So he wanted for the rest of us, the brothers who are making up the organizing for the Racehorse Rally this year to, talk in his stead. And it's an honor to do that and really address the audience of Time for Awakening about this year's Racehorse Rally.
Brother Obi, before you do that and tell us a little bit about some of the things that's going to take place during the rally, talk about the what went on behind the scenes, so to speak. Last year, when we spoke to Brother Imhotep on the program, I think you were involved, but you were involved in Baltimore. As a Philadelphian going down to Baltimore. But since then, it's brothers and sisters here in the city of Philadelphia that's going to be conducting one at the same time, and brothers and sisters in other cities. So, and I know some of them are on the line with us this evening, and we'll kind of bring them in one by one to kind of join the conversation. But talk about how this has spread to other areas and the unified effort between yourself and other cities.
Well, I think I'm going to start with the whole idea of Racehorse. Racehorse coming from the title of Tony Martin's book, talking about the teachings and of the right, excellent, honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, the term Racehorse being popularized by the honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. But the term Racehorse actually existing prior to him. The idea of us as African people, self-defining, self-determining, and putting ourselves and our people first, that we look at our particular situation in America and all over the world as that we are under attack, that we are not in war, that we're not at war, but we're being warred upon, as Mama Marimba Ani teaches us. So we look at it where as though that we're circling the wagon amongst our people. We're bringing race first consciousness back to the forefront again in the tradition of many of our great ancestors. And the fact that this particular rally, as well as the national race First Awareness Week, which I'll talk a little bit about later, along with the other brothers, was ordained by the ancestors. It was a vision that came to Baba Imhotep Hatiyu, who is the head of PLM, Pan-African Liberation Movement, out of Baltimore, Maryland, better known as Tubman City. And his queen, Mama Ife Hatiyu. And the great organizing that he's been doing down there for many years, since 1993, he's, been on the forefront and on the front line for African people. And so the idea was inspired by the ancestors and came through him. And he said, I'm going to bring race-first consciousness back to the forefront in the minds and the hearts of African people. And so last year was the inaugural Race First Rally in Baltimore City, which I attended. I spoke at a beautiful event. It was a procession to Henry Highland Garnett Park in Baltimore City, where many individuals spoke on the importance and significance of race first. And what was so beautiful about it was that it was centralized in a neighborhood, an area of Baltimore that many of us as Black people, as African people live. So it was, right what we call the hood, and it was a beautiful event which spoke right down to earth in a language that many of our people who had never heard of the concept race first could easily understand and digest and process. It's that baby food that we're giving people who have heard it for the first time, just as much as people who are in the choir who have heard the mantra of race first over and over and over and over again. So it was a beautiful event, and I know that Baba Imhotep and I had talked after the event, as well as he talked to the other brothers who are now affiliated with doing race-first rallies in their cities about expanding it, expanding it to other cities. And when the call went out back in March of this year, a lot of cities jumped on it. Three cities jumped on it. I know Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Shreveport, Louisiana, Columbus, Ohio, which came into the fold, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which myself, as a co-chair and organizing committee, along with Professor Carlton Jones, are planning to have it in Philadelphia on the 28th as well. So, that was, something that Baba Imhotep wanted to do, and he was very determined to do that, whereas though each every year cities can start having race first rallies all over the country and really bring the idea of race first to the forefront, to the consciousness, to the minds and the hearts of African men, women, and children. But he also, as of a couple of weeks ago, came up with a brilliant idea to have the first national Race First Awareness Week, which will take place prior to the Race First Rally. It will take place this year and every year during the last week in July. This year, it will take place from July the 25th to July the 31st. There are various different ways in which you can observe the first national Race First Awareness Week in your homes, amongst your families. And there's a flyer out for that. Hopefully you received it. I just resent it to you. And it talks about the various different ways in which we're, celebrating, or not even celebrating, but observing and yet celebrating our Blackness, our Africanity, and striving to keep race first consciousness in the minds and hearts of our people so that we can move out and organize and rally and gather around that concept of race first.
Yeah, brother, about the week observance from July 25th to the 31st, leading to the rally on the 31st. Some of the things that is going to be done, I want you to introduce some of the other folks from the different cities. The holding discussions with family and friends. Talk with the children, grandchildren about race first. Watch black documentaries, and I guess have discussions about them. Now, will these be? I know these are things that can start first in the home, and they should. But would will they be like efforts? Being that some of these cities are kind of opening back up to a certain extent, where you can kind of have person to person, will these things be done in a group type of setting, or how will it be conducted?
From my understanding of it, the only thing I'm sure that will be done in a group type of fashion or communal type of fashion is we do things as African people is the kickoff event that will take place in Baltimore with the flying of the red, black, and green, our colors represented by the African Liberation Flag, which was brought to us by the Right Excellent Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, UNIA. That will take place in Baltimore on the 25th. So they will have an event that will be an inaugural event that will kick off that particular week of activities throughout the country. Like Babo and Notef says, you know, this idea of putting race first into the minds and hearts and consciousness of African people is something that, you know, can spark a flame, and that flame spread, you know what I mean, throughout the country, whereas though people will want to begin to do group or communal activities in their various different cities if they so desire to observe the National Race First Awareness Week.
Before I get you to see if some of the other brothers and sisters from the different cities is on and to get them to chime in, Brother Richard, anything you'd want to throw out there first?
No, not now. I'm going to wait until we get everybody engaged and see where we're going.
Yeah, Brother Uba, I see a few different cities online, and maybe some of the representatives are online. I see Columbus, Ohio, Little Rock, Arkansas, Philadelphia, and New York. I don't know. Of course, I know that you said potentially New York was going to be involved. So maybe some.
That's next year.
Okay.
New York definitely gave their pledge that they would definitely be a part of it for next year, 2022. But as of now, right now, there are just only five cities, being Baltimore, Shreveport, Louisiana, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. Let me open up the line, open up the mic here on a few of the other cities, and maybe this is representatives from some of the cities. Let's go to 614, and that's a Columbus. Columbus, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. How are you, sir?
Okay. Very well. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Are you one of the representatives there that is going to be conducting the racehorse rally in your city?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My name is Jonathan Michael Cross. Mike Surgeon is my pen name on social media, and I am the primary organizer of the Race First Rally here in Columbus, Ohio.
Good. And say your name again, because I'm I make a job.
Mike Surgeon, okay. Like the doctor, Mike Surgeon.
Okay. Let me, before I kind of break off and ask some individual questions, let me see if some of the other representatives from the other cities are on. Let's go to, that's 501 here in Little Rock. 501 Little Rock. Maybe they're not. Let's go to Benton, Benton, Arkansas, 501 again. Benton, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Peace. Yo, this is Brother Over Finley, Kinsey Adelele. I'm in Pine Bluff, Arkansas.
Okay. And you're one of the organizers in Pine Bluff?
Yes. Yeah, I'm one of the organizers in Pine Bluff. You know, we having our rally the same day. It's 1 p.m. here, at, you know, that's Central Time. And, you know, we've been doing the work for quite some time right now. Thankful that the ancestors helped to guide us to, you know, link up with Baba Imhotep to bring us into the fold, you know what I'm saying, so we can, you know, just make a national impact to where people can see we're just not the crazy folks on the outside, you know what I'm saying? This is going on in other places at the same exact time. So, and we're just trying to come from the perspective that we, and, you know, Baba always says this, but, you know, every living thing, every living organism has a survival thrust that ensures that their species survives and continues to thrive. And it almost seems like ours has been shut off for a little while. So we're just trying to bring it back to the forefront for us to understand there's nothing wrong with us wanting to do for us first and be about us first. That's what every other group is doing. They just don't have to say it because it's built into their culture and it's built into ours. We just kind of, you know, ignorant to our own culture. So that's what we're doing. That's kind of the perspective we're coming from.
And give me your name again, brother, and Pine Bluff.
Obafemi Kensie Delele, Brother OB.
Okay. Brother Obafemi and Brother Mike, surgeon.
Yes, sir.
Talk about your two cities, and either one can go first. Brother Obafemi just kind of laid it out. But when you heard about the Race First rallies when Baba Imhotep was having them in Baltimore last year, and you decided we need something like this in our city, talk about the organizing aspect of it, because some of our people in different areas of the country have the impression that our people are not doing anything in these other cities.
Right.
Some people might buy into the narrative that they put on the television that all of our people is running around mindless and the violence is rampant, although we know we got issues in our community. But talk about what it took to say, well, listen, I think this needs to be done in Pine Bluff or this needs to be done in Columbus. And then you or whoever, some of the brothers and sisters involved with you, talk about the organizing part of it. Was it difficult? Was the people more than willing to start being involved? Talk about it from both of you men's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, here in Columbus, Ohio, and thank you again, you know, for the opportunity. Here in Columbus, Ohio, the reception has been mixed, I would say, to be honest. The supporters are people who I expected, you know, their support, some family members, some close friends, certain allies in the neighborhood, in the community, have definitely stepped up and given their support. And then in certain other circles, some of the reception has been a little chilly, a little bit slow to take root. But, you know, we're being very consistent and very diligent in our efforts in terms of not only promoting our event here in August, but the other Race First rallies in the other states and in the other cities where they're taking place. Whenever we see them on social media or online being shared by Baba Imhotep or any of the other organizers in any of the other cities, I'm sharing them on my social media platforms as a sign of solidarity and support, just to be very, very consistent and to let people know that this is not a fluke. This is not a game. It's not a joke. It's very serious. It's an intensification of the contradictions, if you will, in terms of are people really making a unified, concerted effort to let the world know that we intend to apply, to practice, to operationalize a race first paradigm, which automatically and necessarily entails putting ourselves first socially, politically and economically, our spiritual well-being, and focusing on our material survival first. All of those things are fundamental when we talk about race first. And so myself personally, I've been an organizer all of my life. As of this broadcast, I'm 43 years old. However, I co-founded my first African-centered organization when I was 12 years old with some other young people called Umojania. And we were an African-centered youth organization in the early 1990s at that time. So, you know, consciousness is nothing new to me. The idea of being African-centered and having a Black nationalist political philosophy is something that was introduced to me in my home by my parents, thankfully. My brothers and I, we were homeschooled way up until, you know, like middle school and things like that. So our parents were able to instill the value system that they wanted us to have. And I think, you know, moving forward in a post-COVID, post-pandemic world, that's something that I think all Black families and Black parents and Black caregivers really should give some serious thought to if they're not already doing that is us as a community vertically integrating, as Dr. Claude Anderson talked about in Powernomics, vertically integrating and ethno-aggregating around African-centered education and educating our own children. That is a huge economic driver. It will create a lot of jobs, a lot of parallel industries connected to that, and support a lot of Black businesses that way. So organizing for me is a way of life. It's not a fad. It's not a phase. I am healthily and constructively and positively and proactively maladjusted to racism and white supremacy in every area of people activity. And so when Baba Imhotep made the call, I reached out to him privately through back channels and let him know that with his permission, I was on board and I would, you know, organize Columbus, Ohio, and we would do an event in solidarity with himself, PLM, and the brothers and sisters in Baltimore and everywhere else that this is going to be going on. Because when a real brother or a real sister, but in this case, Baba Imhotep and his family, make a call such as this, I feel that we are duty bound as brothers and sisters who are striving to live the laws and the precepts of Ma'at to respond in the spirit of reciprocity to you know, that call and response to when that I go is given, the I may follows. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the school that I was initiated into as a very young person, and that's my heart. And you know, Baba Imhotep is very, very sincere, very brilliant, and very diligent, and the universe honors that. And you know, what we're doing here is just a small reflection of really his diligence and his obedience to the creator and to the ancestors. And we're just honored and happy to support everyone who's a part of this effort.
I want to come back and make mention of something that you mentioned in the beginning of what you said, Brother Surgeon, but let me go over to Brother Obafemi in Little Rock. Brother Obafemi, you heard Brother Mike talking about the organization or organizing in his city and how some of the response was a little chilly in the beginning, but people started becoming more receptive. Talk about it from your aspect in Little Rock.
Okay, so, I mean, I'm in Pine Bluff.
Okay.
Pine Bluff is like...
Yeah, I keep saying Little Rock, but the Pine Bluff. How far is Pine Bluff from Little Rock?
Yeah, we about 30 to 45 minutes away. So
okay.
It's a trip right down the street, really.
Okay.
But we do have people from Little Rock that's coming. You know, Little Rock is the capital city, but we've been organizing here in Pine Bluff. But Pine Bluff is like the Mecca for Black people in Arkansas.
So okay.
Anything concerning Black people, you know, learning about Black history in Arkansas, you're going to start with Pine Bluff. Like, this is the spot. So, Pine Bluff is a majority Black city. We like 70, 75% Black in a town of about 45 to 50,000 people. So, You know, I mean, we are in the Bible Belt, so you know that does have a play in it. But you know, me and one of the other organizers, he's on the line too, my brother Freddie Savage.
Okay.
We are involved in agriculture, and so we facilitate three lots that we've adopted as community gardens. So that's kind of some of the basis of where our work in the community has started from. We've done community cleanups to movie night, just to sharing and informing the people about, you know, different situations. We saw different documentaries, you know, stuff like that. I do PowerPoints. So, you know, just trying to share information with the community, but kind of meeting people where they at. So depending on a person's focus, we just try to show them how you can be race first with what your interest is. So if you involved in health, well, then we need healthcare workers. We need people who understand holistic health and herbs and you know, all the different healing modalities to help heal ourselves. If growing food is your thing, we need to be able to produce food that helps sustain us, so we can provide our own sustenance every day instead of having to depend on the grocery stores and all of this that we don't own and control. So we're just trying to meet people where they are and what their interests are, and showing them how you can be involved and be race first in what you're already doing. You know what I'm saying? We're not trying to tell people to drop your organization or whatever you're in. We're just saying you need to be race first. So, you know, kind of the same sentiments as Brother Mike just spoke. Like the reception has been mixed. I've, you know, people been calling, asking me questions like, you know, what's going on? Is this a march? Is this a, you know, is this a boycott? Like, just asking questions of what actually is to take place. And I'm just sharing with them, like, we really just want to get out this message to understand that in order from this point forward, we have to operate from a race first point of view, in order to ensure our economic, our social, and our spiritual survival, you know, where we at. And like the brother said, the economics that can be involved in this is major, being able to create jobs, employment situations, but also we're in the process of developing a micro school, a micro African-centered school here in Pine Bluff. You know, so we're talking institution building. We're talking, you know, long-lasting programs and institutions to be able to solidify and institutionalize the information that we're sharing just word of mouth right now. We want to put those things in the formats to where these are institutions that are set in the community. So when you walk outside your door, you can see some reflections of some of the stuff that you've been hearing, whether you went to the African Center School or you came out to the garden or you've been a part of this project or you came out to this event. Now people have places in the community that they can go and see stuff reflected with this race first agenda and mindset. So that's kind of where we're coming from.
To the listening audience, you hear representatives of several of the race first observances and rallies that's going to be going on nationwide, being observed from July 25th to the 31st, culminating with the race first rallies on the 31st. A coordinated effort among some of the cities represented this evening is Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Columbus, Ohio. Shreveport, Louisiana is not on as of yet. I guess they'll be joining us. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Baba Imhotep out of Baltimore. Maybe somebody from Baltimore will call up, but they kind of spearhead things. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I say something real quick?
Mm-hmm.
The race first rally that I think people have been saying Shreveport, but it's Gulfport, Mississippi.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Gulfport, Mississippi. That's where the other rally is.
Okay. All right. I got you. Yeah, I was saying Shreveport, Louisiana. So it's Gulfport, Mississippi. Okay. Brother Richard.
Yeah, you know, well, first I want to thank you, brothers, for, you know, maintaining the spirit of the race first, you know, organizational, you know, transformational effort, you know, in hearing, you know, even in hearing that the call was made and for some reason you're, you know, that you felt the inclination to make that connection, because it shows, as y'all have already enunciated, that the spirit of organizing from a national perspective, especially, you know, is really, really intense, and that you men have are examples of what you've been doing and that others been doing and maintaining this and taking on this charge. As I was listening, you know, my first question was going to ask about your particular journey, but I was, you know, Brother Mike Surgeon, you know, gave, you know, here early on his development and organizational development and personal development, being a part of the of a family development. So what I'll ask you, Brother Oba, and I'm really interested in your urban gardening, so that people can get to see that we're just ordinary people doing, you know, extraordinary things in relationship to perpetuating this our race first ideal. How did your personal development come to where you are now to take on this the race first week and this to awareness and organizing effort for that particular day? How did you get to the point to be here now, if you don't mind me asking?
That's a good question. I'm from a city that's majority Black. My mother is a school teacher for, you know, over 30 years. My father started his own business in printing T-shirts in like 1986. We have a historically Black college here, University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. So, and, you know, my parents, you know, reading a lot to me. My father introduced me to, like, the Final Call, Nation of Islam. Like, so things, you know, I'm 42. So, you know, I had a chance to kind of see different things going on, going up, Rodney King and, you know, hearing Public Enemy, Dead Prez, like, all of these things have been around, you know what I'm saying? But as a teenager, got out here in the streets, got involved with gangs and stuff like this. But really what helped me to come on, I had my first child when I was 24. That was in 2003. And, you know, I was just asking questions like, what do I want my children to be exposed to? And why does it seem like so, you know, Black people have so many problems and issues, like we being targeted. So just asking questions led me on a journey. I end up, you know, got a relationship with a sister. She introduced me to an African bookstore in my city, and she wasn't even from the city. Like, and when she showed me where the bookstore was, I'm like, yo, I didn't roll past this bookstore a thousand times, smoking weed, drinking all kinds of stuff, you know, just wilding out in the streets and didn't know. And I walked into the bookstore, and he's my elder today. I'm, you know, this is about 2006, 2007. He just started asking me questions. He handed me some information. He started giving me some DVDs. I started buying books. Eventually in 2007, I joined an African-centered study group called Ipeti Foot African Institute, which was established in Pine Bluff about 92, 93. It used to be called the African Think Tank. So college students, you know, people who would come here to go to college from different cities, Chicago, Detroit, you know, Memphis, St. Louis, they would converge on a bookstore and just ask questions and stuff like that. So I joined the study group in the you know, early 2000s, and it's just been up from there, like, you know, researching, studying, and I think I did my, like, first community event, like, 2011, so I've been involved in, you know, putting together information, whether it's presentations, showing documentaries. After a while, I got to a point to where, as you know, and I told my brother who's on the line, Freddie Savage, I said, you know, only way that people really gonna get this, man, we gotta show them. You know, talking ain't enough. We gotta be able to show and prove what we're talking about. So that's what led to the community garden. I'm like, yo, I can get on here and talk about garden, but it's a difference when they can come and actually see the work that we're putting in, and they can get involved to see what we're talking about. So now you got some more stock in the game. You got a hand in the game now. So that's kind of the perspective I'm coming from.
I was just
having a genuine love for the people, man. That's it. Go ahead.
I was just thinking with the community garden, Elliot, you know, and I don't know, because Brother Tommy and Sister Lavinia just did a tour down south from Peace Park, and it was just been interesting, you know, because Peace Park is a community garden. And to see, you know, that the duplication and the possible networking and coming out of the same experience. And I'm just throwing that, and Brother Oban knows Brother Tommy. So there's a possible networking, sharing information, connection that can come out of that as it relates to land and sharing experiences around that. That was just interesting. In that sense, and shows the possibility, not just with Baba Imhotep in relationship to Race First, but other things coming out of, and it's just good to see that, and your particular experience. You know, if I may, I like to ask Brother Mike Surgeon, you've been, you know, also been, you know, grew up in this experience of race identification, cultural and historical clarity. And you both mentioned about basically coming through the 90s. And the question comes to my mind now is, it was at a time when race first was a to a certain community that seemed broader, a popular ideal. In your area now, in Columbus, how do people respond just to the symbol of Race First? And maybe that just might be the people around you, or what your perception is of the people in Columbus in general. How do they respond to that ideal of Race First? Is it something that's considered old, something that's, you know, like, I don't understand, or something that people are afraid to enunciate? How do you perceive that that ideal of Race First?
Yes, sir. Well, thank you. When I look at that question that you're asking me, I observe it from a couple of different perspectives, because when you talk to brothers and sisters on the street, on the block, you know, one-on-one in you know, sort of private type conversations, the idea of doing for self, creating our own, you know, jobs, acquiring property and businesses, whether inside of cities, larger cities, or in more rural areas. I mean, those conversations happen. You know, I'm a part of those conversations. I try to find appropriate moments to inject those type of topics into conversations when I have the opportunity, and you know, sort of just like on an each one teach one type level, on a political education level, and just to sort of take a poll in my own head, if you will, to see where people are, and the people are there. The people, even at very low levels of political consciousness, if they are not satisfied with their current predicament, or their children's options, or what they see as the future options for their children, then people are definitely open to not only talking about, but being a part of some change and doing something differently. The challenge really is with the temper centers, if you will, the people who in the community who benefit from the ignorance and the poverty and the lack of cohesiveness and organization, hence the fratricide and the violence and the killing. And that's the dirty little secret a lot of times that we really don't want to talk about. I mean, what white folk and white supremacy, for the most part, you know, are doing and have done and are predisposed to doing, you know, to black people and with black bodies, so to speak. That's obvious. That's the elephant in the room. The more insidious obstacle has been and continues to be the temper centers, the collaborators, the people who write a lot of grants and get a lot of money from cities and from political parties and major corporations to do community events and things like that, but they don't have a direct organic legitimate, if I might say, connection, relationship, or rapport with the community, with the black people, with the lumpen proletariat, so to speak, that they purport to represent. And they are the gatekeepers in a lot of respects in terms of local media and other certain types of outlets to either spread the message of race first or not share that information. And many of them have chosen to not share the information because of, in many cases, where they get their money from, and you know they're about, you know, really being very attentive to remembering what side of the toast that their bread is buttered on, and they don't see it on the red, black, and green side, so they're not going to publicly or privately endorse it. But that's still. We expect that, you know what I mean? But it's always every time it happens, it's always very instructive and very revealing because it gives us insight and it gives us intelligence as to who the modern collaborators are. It's easy to see who William O'Neill is, you know, 40 years in retrospect after, you know, he's successful in assisting the power structure in taking out Fred Hampton and Mark Clark and doing what they did that evening in Chicago. You see what I'm saying? But we got to identify the modern saboteurs and ones who continue to take bribes to hinder our progress and find ways to move around them and still get to the people and move our own agenda. And that's what this is about. This is about grassroots, African-centered grassroots mobilization and agenda setting basically correcting the narrative. You know what I mean? Because a lot of the people who are speaking and trying to set the benchmarks for progress in this era are illegitimate as far as we're concerned. I mean, we're thankful for the holiday and Juneteenth and what it represents, but the grassroots in the black intelligentsia, the African-centered black intelligentsia, is actively working towards much, much more, with all due respect, than just a holiday and the Congressional Black Caucus and all the Boule Negroes in every city from top to bottom. They know that, but they run ahead of us and they do the piecemeal milk toast stuff, and that's what captures the press, and that's what the media and the political structure, whether you're talking about conservatives or liberals or Republicans or Democrats, that's what they want to focus on. They want to ignore the people who are talking about race first, talking about black first, talking about Afrocentricity and pan-Africanism. But we can't be ignored and we can't be silenced. And we're going to make our presence known, not only here in Columbus, not only in Baltimore, but in all the other cities where these events are taking place at home and abroad. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, Richard, I think you didn't hit on two areas that I want to focus in on in the next hour, man. That was a great question and a great answer by Brother Mike. We're going to take a brief break. But Richard, did you want to say something in reference to what Mike said?
And then we can come back and
Yeah, that's the path I wanted to go down anyway, because with all the brothers, and we'll get Brother Obot back involved in the conversation. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue to continue the discussion. See, you got a few calls on the line. We'll go to them, see if they want to make a question or comment for our guests. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're talking about the Race First rally and week of commemoration from July 25th to the 31st, culminating with the Race First rallies in several cities. Several cities' representatives are in discussion this evening: Columbus, Ohio, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Baltimore, which kind of spearheaded things, and Gulfport, Mississippi. They're not on as of yet, I don't think, but it's enough brothers and or sisters that are listening that can get involved in the conversation. Again, you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the Slave Theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lauren Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9/11 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in conversation with our special guest this evening, even though it's Freestyle Friday. Representatives of the Race First rallies in several cities simultaneously, Race First Week culminating with the Race First rally on July 31st. Pine Bluff, Arkansas is represented, Columbus, Ohio, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hopefully members of Gulfport, Mississippi will join us. And Baltimore, the flagship, so to speak, sends its regards. Richard, you asked a good question there to Brother Mike before we went to break. I want to get everybody in on throwing some light on that answer, because I love the answer that Brother Mike Surgeon gave. Before we do that, let me... I think we're getting a little feedback. I think that's you, Brother Oba.
Positive, sir, maybe.
I'm a mute.
Okay.
I'm a mute you temporarily, because this is a little feedback,
okay.
Feedback on your end. And I'll bring you in when you can throw some light on in regards to the question. But before we talk about that a little more, let me take a few of these calls, and let's go to 267. 267? 267, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to Sean in Oberlin, Ohio. Sean.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm good. The only question I have for the guests is, do you have a website I can go to look up some of the information? I kind of came in kind of late.
Brother Oba Finney, or Brother Surgeon, or even Brother Oba can throw some light on that. Did you hear his question, Brother Oba?
I heard the brother's question.
There is, you can always go to the Facebook page. There is an official Facebook page for the Race First Rally, as well as the National Race First Awareness Week. There's a Facebook page. You could also go to Baba Imhotep's personal page on Facebook and get any information you need on the Race First Rally. There isn't a web address that I know of just yet. I know maybe the organization PLM is working on an official web address for the Race First Rallies, but those are the two ways I know that you can get in touch with or to become abreast with any information that you may need on the Race First Rally in your area. I hear that you're from Ohio, so I'm sure that you would probably be attending the Race First Rally going on in Columbus, my brother.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, sir. Thank you for your call. Let's go to 215-678.
Hey, what's going on?
Can you hear me? Oh. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah. what's going on, Brother Ellis? This is Brother Carl, man.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm good. I'll be working with Brother Oba on the Race First Rally here in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I was just calling in to, he pretty much said everything that you said. I was calling in to support the brothers that have already dedicated a lot of their time to, you know, making the thing a success.
Good. I'm because I'm getting a little interference on your line too. I'm going to bring y'all back in when we ask a few of these questions, because I want to get both of your men's opinions in reference to something that was said just before we went to break. I'm going to put you back on hold, Professor. Let's go to New York, 917, New York. New York, are you there? Let's put them on hold. Brother Obafemi, Brother Mike, something that you said before break in reference to the question that Richard asked you, and you talked about some of the gatekeepers that are not involved in the community and is afraid to put a race first narrative before the people. And I can see from your explanation, Brother Mike, that you see the people that's in that mindset or occupying those positions in the community, so to speak, are an impediment to the progress of our people in these communities. Am I right in assessing that?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Now, I'm just put a pin in it right there for me. Brother Obafemi, you're in Little Rock, a city that's predominantly black. I think you said 75%.
That was Pine Bluff, sir.
I keep saying Little Rock. Okay. You're in Pine Bluff. A city that, as you said, it's about 75% black, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, yes, indeed.
Are you experiencing the same thing that Brother Mike Surgeon said that he's dealing with in Columbus?
Yo, this is a Boulé city. Like I said, we got a historically black college here, so, you know, the headquarters for, you know, the Brothers of the Craft, the Divine Nine, all of that's here. So, yeah, you know, we got some people that, you know, on some Negro stuff. And, you know, when I say Negro, we talking about integrationists.
Okay.
And, you know, let's go along and get along. So, yeah, that's definitely here. So, yeah, we dealing with it as best as we can. There are people who want us to, you know, people from the city trying to co-opt stuff and, hey, why don't y'all come and be part of our political team? And we need y'all energy over here. But we like, if y'all ain't talking about putting our people first, then I ain't rocking with you. So, you know, we, like I said, we in a small town, but yet in the state of Arkansas, this is considered the city. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, it's very imperative that we make this statement here in Pine Bluff, because it's going to send ripples
throughout other areas in the state of Arkansas to let them know, you know, this is how we got to move forward. So there's definitely some pushback. There's definitely some pushback as expected, though. I think we pretty much expected it because we get it in the other things that we're doing out here in the community. So I know for us to come out and say, hey, race first, that yes, there are some people who definitely don't want to see this happen from our own, you know, from our own people. So,
Richard, let me say something in reference to the answer that those two men gave. Mm-hmm. When Brother Ober Finney said that it's some integrationists there. And I just want to change that now, because when you're talking about integrated, you're talking about a mixture of things and they becoming equal parts. When you're talking about our people in regards to whites, you're not talking necessarily about integration. And this is just from my perspective. You're talking about assimilation, because whites don't want to be mixed and become equal parts with you. They want you listen to the dictations of them and have you believe that you're on equal footing. So we have a lot of assimilationists in our community. Well, put it this way. Some of the people that the black public looks towards are assimilationists. And they can control the narrative, so to speak, because they have certain monies. They're on the television. They can get out in front of the people. And some of the people buy that message because they look like them. We see that this is happening in the city of Pine Bluff, which is a small city compared to Philadelphia or even Baltimore, and it's the same issue. Richard, if we are to get beyond this, we have to figure out a way. And some of the men have. They have come up with ideas to have African-centered, Pan-African representation in these cities where we dwell. You have to do that. I know some of the men don't want to get involved politically, and I ain't talking about getting involved politically like no Democrat and Republican crap. Anybody that listens to that program know we're not talking about that. But we have to develop African-centered people that we cultivate out of our communities to run for these offices in cities where we predominate. Similar to Little Rock, similar to Pine Bluff, similar to Philadelphia, where we can control the politics of these areas. We have to, or else we're going to keep running into this problem. Richard, talk about that, and then I want to try to get Carl Tone Jones or even Obi to expand on what Brother Ober Finney just said about Pine Bluff.
I have this clip that kind of deals with this class thing, right? But I'm wondering, as the Race First rally is being put in place, and you're saying, you know, and I agree with the distinction between the assimilation, what I would say, grouping, population, people, and those who see Race First as the core governing principle. I think it's 2 minutes, but I wanted to see, you know, to continue this discussion, to see how do we decode that, if that's okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
To see if it fits of why the Race First rally is so imperative, and what these men are doing, men and women are doing, is so necessary for what we're dealing with. Let me see how we react to this, if I got it right.
Not talking about Cheney State. They're not talking about Delaware State. They're not talking about Langston. They're not talking about, quite frankly, the 90 plus and over 100 HBCUs that aren't among the elite middle class HBCUs. And in many ways, those are the places that do even more difficult work in terms of the types of students they accept, in terms of the type of resources they have access to. I mean, have we paid enough attention to the run-of-the-mill rank-and-file HBCUs?
Well, frankly, Mark, I think this is one of the things that we have kind of lost, that Jim Crow, the end of Jim Crow and the end of segregation, at least de jure segregation, has kind of blurred our vision in. And that is, you know, the idea of how class operates in Black communities. I don't really have a dog in the real HU fight. I went to Tennessee State, and I remind those students at Howard every day, I'm one of those public HBCU field Negroes. I'm one of the moral land grant Negroes. So I'm much easier to get in a beef with Jackson State or Grambling or FAM than I am, you know, with Hampton. But you know, the idea that, well, Howard is always getting stuff and Morehouse is always getting stuff and Spelman's always getting stuff. Let's be very clear. There's a reason why Ruth Simmons went to Prairie View. You see, you know, I've taught classes, and I'm going to tell you right now, SAT scores and grades don't mean a damn thing when you start talking about doing intellectual work in a way that allows people to showcase their natural intelligence and their willingness to apply that intelligence. And so what I don't want to see happen here is the idea that somehow there is a ranked, there's a hierarchy of HBCUs with people at the bottom and people at the top. I can quite frankly tell you that's simply not true. Now, people, you know, there are going to be people who argue with me, including people at Howard. But I'll tell you right now, the faculty at our HBCUs aren't there because they can't go anywhere else. They're there because they chose to be there, just like Nicole and Ta-Nehisi are joining us. They chose to join us, and the students they will find there are no smarter or no less intelligent than students at any of the other HBCUs. And there are a lot of people who don't believe that. And of course, I just laugh at them because I'm like, you don't know like I know. In fact, you might know like I know, but what y'all fighting over finally is the brand. You're fighting over the name on the sweatshirt, the network, and the access to this kind of network that allow you to advance. And that is absolutely a class issue that we must confront. I don't know how we do that though, brother, because it's deeply rooted, as you can imagine, as you know.
And the reason why I thought that was, you know, because what Brother Obah brought up, you know, is even within that, there's another class distinction, if I'm reading right? Those who see race first is different than even those who goes to those different ranked HBCUs like the one in Pine Bluff, or the people who support Blind Bluff. Does that resonate to the reason why this race first rally is so important to have, that there is a class division within Black folks amongst a certain group, and then there's a cultural, ideological division within Black folks when it gets to centering amongst race first compared to, as you said, Elliot, assimilation? I just thought that was emphasized. And how do y'all see that? I mean, do y'all agree or disagree? Does it resonate or is it different?
I just think that we deal with a lot of tribalism in essence, and that's across the board from the continent to here in the States. You know, I see it, you know, we speak so many different languages throughout the continent and the diaspora. So, and the tribalism, you know, here, and I'll say it manifests in ways like you saying classism. I'm saying that's all wrapped up into tribalism. We have people that, we got people saying I'm indigenous, or I'm Black, or I'm a Moor, I'm a Hebrew Israelite, and I'm not against any of those distinctions. But what I'm against is if you're anti-African, then I can't really rock with you. So I think that we've been wrapped up in so many different levels of tribalism too. Like on the continent, we got people in Ghana who may not deal with people in Kenya, or Nigerians who don't rock with Somalians and stuff like this. So I think all of that is wrapped up in the tribalism that we've been dealing with for well over hundreds of years. We've gone into the thousands of years. I think that's a major issue that we have to address at some point, because it prevents us from being able to communicate effectively with one another.
Brother Mike, what's your opinion? And then I'm going to ask Professor Carl Tone Jones the same question.
My opinion regarding what specifically, sir?
Richard, ask your question again.
In the sense of they were making a distinction between class as far as the HBCUs. And I was raising the question, isn't race first, another distinction which should be inclusive, but they see it, and Elliot had mentioned assimilation. So how do you see the race first identifier as encompassing, clashing with, if at all, the class distinction that they were raising between the upper tier HBCUs and the lower tier HBCUs?
Right. Well, I agree with the brother from Pine Bluff that just spoke, you know, as far as just talking about tribalism and sort of the different cliques and sets and pecking orders that we have identified with and sort of subdivided ourselves in a lot of cases into for identification, membership, status, and these are all, I think, human needs at a certain level, but how we go about fulfilling these needs is where the rubber meets the road. I'm thinking about a line from one of Bob Marley's songs where he said, "Every need has an ego to feed," and you know, we all have, at a basic level, you know, an ego, but we want to have a healthy ego. We want to have a balanced ego, you know, or schema, mindset, mentality. You know, we want it to be African-centered. We don't want it to be materialistic, individualistic to the exclusion or to the detriment of the collective. Those are all signs of a Eurocentric value system, and that's detrimental to our survival, to our past in terms of honoring and venerating our ancestors. It's detrimental to our present, and it's harmful and it's injurious to our future. It's not giving our young people a firm foundation to stand on, because if we break, if we fold, if we cower, that's what white folk and Asians and everyone else around the world is going to be expecting our young people to do. And that's not a fair or tenable or legitimate position to put the youth. And so the race first paradigm is a viable alternative to the status quo. To be honest with you, to acknowledge the opposition is not to say that we're in competition with the Boule. We just understand that they have access to a lot of resources. And as one of the brothers indicated a few moments ago, they're always on the television and in front of the people. And it's human nature. Whatever people hear the most and see the most, they're going to tend to believe or consider to be authentic or legitimate. And so that's why this race first movement and race first awareness week and everything that's following through, you know, into Black August, culminating on the 28th of August this summer, is so necessary. That's why the coordination and the cooperation between the brothers and sisters in these other cities, in these other states, is important. We're leading by example, and it's beautiful to me, because what is so needed is happening naturally. Like Baba Imhotep said, and Brother Oba alluded to earlier in the broadcast, this race first agenda, rally, movement, everything associated with it is sanctioned by the ancestors. And anybody who has a spiritual foundation that is real, that is Black, African-centered, connected to grandma them and grandpa them, you know that when the Most High and when that cloud of witnesses says that it is so, and this is so. And so we're moving in that spirit and in that energy, and we're with the ancestors who have always done the right thing or the right things, if you will, at the proper time. And we're doing the right thing right now at the proper time. And so in that sense, again, no weapon formed against us shall prosper. We have no competition, although there is opposition. You see what I'm saying? That opposition is going to continue to wither and deteriorate because their position is founded on a lie. And if they want to assimilate and kiss, you know, the feet of racism and white supremacy in the ways that they do that, they can do that on an individual basis, but not in the name of black people. We're taking that away from them by making this unified statement on a national and international level with race first. So that's the best way that I could respond to that question.
Professor Jones, any comment in reference to the question Richard asked?
I want to make sure I understand exactly what you said again.
Richard.
I think you spoke to, hey, peace, Brother Richard. Did you speak to the division and the subdivision amongst,
right,
you know,
right,
even? Okay. So it's evident it's there. And you know, what I noticed is 2020 is something we don't really give a lot of reference to because we truly don't understand the psychological and traumatic impact it had on our community. Whatever people were doing before, they're doing it with more intensity now. So if they were Pan-African, then they're really Pan-African. If they weren't Pan-African, then they were ever there of the secular. But I agree with one of the brothers. I'm not sure who said it, but you know, the tribalism aspect has been a part of our culture for a long time. It's just that our ancestors figured out how to cooperate with one another and respect each other's tribes. I think what we have right now is we've been indoctrinated in white supremacist in a white supremacist mindset for so long that we align being black or African with losing. So most of us want to be something more than just black, more than just African. And that is where the tribalism is really kicking in regards to what we're talking about with the, and let's face it, we've always had sellouts in our community. Africa wouldn't have been conquered if we didn't have sellouts on the continent. So, and that speaks to the Boulé class. It speaks to the Negro that was on the plantation who snitched, you know, on people who are planning to make their getaway or people who are planning uprising. What we're dealing with right now is a course correction similar to what happened in Haiti. You know, in Haiti when Fatima gathered everybody together and they had the prayer on the mountain, that was an atonement for all of the betrayals of the community beforehand, for all the betrayals of the different nations, all the betrayals that led to the and capture and enslavement. So what we're building with, you know, if I understand Baba Imhotep's vision with this race first rally, is this is a place aware for us to understand that let's atone for all the things that those who have been honorable to the community, you know, may have had our differences. Let's atone for all that and put all race matters in regarding to upholding and being self-reliant and self-sufficient, self-determined as a people, put all of those groups under one umbrella. And if we can put all those groups under one umbrella, then we can start, you know, using that as the microcosm to be the heartbeat, the drumbeat to what we hope will spread to the masses through this critical mass in terms of African-centered unity. And so that's what I believe, you know, when this rally was put together last year, that was one of the visions. And it's already expanding. It was one city last year, it's 5 cities this year, and we have commitments from other cities that they want to be a part of it next year. So it's already moving in the right direction and at a most important time, because these days that we're living in right now, it's very important that we as black people get our act together, because we're running out of time. Ashe.
And if I can, one more piece to, and the reason why I'm doing this, because I want the Time for Awakening audience to see the importance of what you men are doing in relationship, because, you know, when the Universal Negro Improvement Association and Marcus Garvey projected the notion of race first, right? We've seen the power that it had in a historical moment of bringing the different fractions together, right? I mean, I always go to that 1921-22 convention. But at the same time, I'm looking at recognizing what work we are engaged in. And I wanted to bring up another segment of our community to get our reaction of how powerful what you men are doing in being able to connect. And because Brother Mike and Brother Oba, Professor Carl, whether you fall in that same age group, but we know in our cities right now, there's a lot of, death amongst being perpetrated amongst our youth. So what is being galvanized through this race first rally, and what is being asked of the race first awareness week is like so important. And I thought this brother from the urban, I think he's out of the urban nerd. He was addressing the shooting that was happening in Philadelphia, but we know what was going on in Chicago and in other places. And I just wanted to see how we react to, and as we're organizing this and promoting the need for this race first rally, why those are the Time for Awakening audience need to participate and find a way to participate. Just give me another 2 minutes and I'll leave us alone on this and see if it works.
Y'all girls out there, young girls, and I gotta say it like this, and can't nobody tell me I'm wrong, because I'm straight from the streets. I'm not a hood nigga no more, and I'm not a real nigga, so I'm not gonna put that label on me. But I don't care nothing about your statistics. I don't care nothing about none of that shit. Miss me with all of that shit. I'm from the streets. I know for a fact what's going on and where we come from and what our generation birthed. And I'm telling you right now, when we was growing up young, a lot of you young girls that may see this video, a lot of you young guys that may see this video, a lot of us, when we was growing up, we partake in fuck shit in the street. A lot of y'all mamas was hoes. A lot of y'all daddies wasn't shit. We was running wild, slanging and banging, slanging dick everywhere, and girls was out hoeing. A lot of y'all moms got pregnant by dudes, and she didn't know who the fathers was. It was the Death Row, Wu-Tang, Bad Boy era, Freak Picnic, Freak Nick in Atlanta, South Carolina Bike Weekend, Virginia Beach Weekend, Essence Festival in the Bahamas, Cancun, Jamaica, Memorial Day, Miami, all that stuff was going on. Let me tell you young people something, man, and I'm explaining to you why you see what you see now. Because, see, a lot of people my age, young people, we like to lie to y'all, and we don't tell y'all the truth. My generation wasn't shit. We sold a lot of drugs. We made a lot of money. I'm going to talk to y'all in language. We run around. We fucked a lot of women and made a lot of babies. But I want y'all to understand something. For us, that guys that was killing each other and fucking and banging and slanging, so was your mamas. A lot of y'all mamas was cold-blooded whores. I could pull up videos from the Freaknik and you will see your mama. I could pull up videos from South Carolina Bike Weekend. Your mama was on the back of a motorcycle with a mini dress on with no panties on. Coochie and butthole, everything hanging out. Going down.
Now, that I'm only, and I apologize if the language is too brutal for some, or, you know, offensive or whatever, but when we're looking at the young people now that this race first rally is supposed, we want to attract to it. Do we need to be conscious? that these are the children of what this brother was saying of that generation produce. And should we be conscious as we place this rally? And I heard Brother Mike say the one-on-one conversation, and I also heard Brother Obi Fumi speak about his personal experience. Should we be conscientious about that community that's in the community that is also right now devastating, creating a devastating environment as we're putting together this race first rally and race first week.
Can I speak to that real quick?
Yes.
Okay. This is Mike Surgeon in Columbus, Ohio. I think that I want to speak from a solution based perspective with my response here, mm-hmm. and talk about something that we've actually been pursuing, that we have done, that we did well in advance of March of 2020 and the whole COVID shutdown. We wrote a notarized letter. I did as the president and CEO of the Self Knowledge Academy. We have a website, the Self Knowledge Academy, theselfknowledgeacademy.com. You can check it out, get more information. But in September of 2018, I, as the president and CEO, signed a letter and sent it to the then Secretary of State, John Husted, who now happens to be the lieutenant governor of the state of Ohio, letting him know that it was our intention to annex the greater South Linden area, which is my home neighborhood where I went to high school and everything like that, here in Columbus, Ohio, and included three other adjacent neighborhoods, contiguous neighborhoods to South Linden, those being Milo Grogan, American Edition, and Brittany Hills. And we told them that it's our intention to pursue a legal process of annexing that section of the city of Columbus from the city, withdrawing from the city, and creating our own municipality. Now, I would like to propose that as a national remedy, a national solution. I know I'm not the only person that's ever spoken along those lines, but part of my background is actually in, you know, public policy and political science. I just do it from an African-centered standpoint. I try to use laws and policies to undo the things that they've used laws and policies to commit, you know, against us as far as putting us in the situation that we find ourselves in. I think one of the only ways that we can really viably and spatially create the type of change that we're talking about for this population of youth whose parents come from, you know, the 80s and the 90s and the crack and the prison industrial complex. And I'm familiar with all that. I'm from the neighborhood. I'm from the inner city, dealt with all of those types of things on a daily basis growing up. So I'm not a stranger to any of it. But until we have political sovereignty, geographical control over a defined space, and that space is called something different than Philadelphia or New York or Washington, D.C. or Miami or L.A. or Chicago or any of these other places, we can't create a different standard, different rules of engagement. What I'm saying is I want to keep it positive so that I don't lose people. Here in Columbus, what we're talking about is creating our own little black city within a city. That way, we don't have Columbus police patrolling our streets anymore. We have our own police force, and it's going to be through city ordinance required that they have to live in the community if they want to be on the police department, if they want to be trash men, if they want to, you know, work in the engineering department at any level of municipal government. This must be a requirement nationwide. And we can add this, and we're talking, you know, with Baba Imhotep, and we'll be, you know, cultivating these conversations along with food security. That's something else I'm very, very focused on. What we refer to as ACFS or African Center Food Security is very important. And so all of these conversations, all of these solutions, all these remedies are necessary. And all of these organizations that are coming together around this race first agenda are leading in these efforts. And so in closing, the only thing I will say also is that as a lifelong poet, musician, artist, somebody who can play musical instruments, who can read music, going back to my school days when it wasn't cool to be walking, you know, in the neighborhood back home with your trumpet case or your this or your that, you know, that wasn't really fashionable. But then all these years later, you got people who don't know anything about music, calling themselves artists and musicians and things, but coming out with a lot of lyrics that have really been the soundtrack and created the whole narrative and the mantra that has led so many of our brothers and sisters and our peers astray to make, you know, bad decisions and have maybe more children in certain cases than they could take care of. I mean, a lot of that was programmed into the music. And my only thing that I'll say, and this is just a personal thing, some others may disagree, but I don't think that the artists or any of the industry executives who participated in any of that should be leading anything remotely close to a race first agenda. I think people like Baba Imhotep and Brother Tone and certain others who got grassroots credentials locally where they are the ones that nationally we should be looking towards for solutions. And if people like, with all due respect, Mr. T.I. and others want to participate and want to turn a new leaf or something, they need to get off stage and stop trying to be upfront and leading something that they weren't a part of. If you created trap and you can't create the solution when it comes to race first, but you can fund it, you can support it like that, and you can learn from brothers and sisters like Baba Imhotep and others who've been doing it for over 30 years. That's the ma'at in it. And myself as a nation builder, as a 43-year-old at this point, I feel like I've earned a right and I have a responsibility at this point to make certain statements like this on platforms such as this so that people understand you're not coming into chaos. You're coming into ma'at. You're coming into order. You're coming into structure. You're coming into a place of respect. You see what I'm saying? So when Baba Imhotep said that this is sanctioned by the ancestors, for certain of us, I mean, you straighten up literally and figuratively when you hear that, because you know everything that's entailed in that. So this isn't a game. If you took the dope game seriously, we need people to take this seriously and honor and respect the time and the sacrifices and the integrity that has gone into this work that all of these brothers and sisters have been putting in for decades. And I want to say thank you to all of you all, because I've been doing it in my small way, in my humble way myself. And I know, you know, the life, and I know what it takes. So I want to say thank all of y'all for choosing this path, because it's not the wealthy path. It's not the popular path, but it's the necessary path. And it's the path that's really going to produce the kind of future that our young people really, really deserve.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to come back and we're going to bring it on home with our guest this evening. You get on if you with the time we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're representatives of the Race First Week, culminating with the Race First Rally on July 31st. Brother Oba Olienka, Professor Carl Tone Jones from Philadelphia, Brother Oba Finney from Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and Brother Mike Surgeon is with us from Columbus, Ohio. Again, you can get involved in the conversation while we have left by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometz U Black family, to join your interconnected Kometz U Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
That this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We're just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 10 o'clock straight up here on the Friday edition of Time for an Awakening, and we're joining conversation with organizers of race first rallies in several cities that will be going on simultaneously the week of July 25th. Culminating with the Race First rallies on July 31st. Brother Mike Surgeon out of Columbus, Ohio. Brother Oba Finney out of Pine Bluff, Arkansas is with us this evening. Professor Carl Tone Jones and Brother Oba Olienka are here with us from Philadelphia. Baltimore, Brother Baba Amohotep is with us in spirit. We don't have representatives from Gulfport, Mississippi, where another one will be going on. And next year, I understand New York City and several other cities is going to be involved. Coming down the home stretch with our discussion this evening with all the brothers involved. I'm glad we touched on a lot of those things, Richard, that you'd mentioned. The collaborators, the violence in our communities that seems to be off the hook in several of these cities. Professor Jones I saw him on social media not too long ago speaking about some of this violence in Philadelphia. Those are questions that we have to come up with the solutions with, similar to what you heard some of the voices in those collages talking about. Some of the quote-unquote collaborators are with white politicians and others in these cities talking about they're looking for a solution. These Europeans don't want any solution for violence in our communities. In fact, they want more of it, because then they can put more of our young people and older people in modern-day slavery, no matter what they say about they want prison reform and all this other window dressing. They don't want this violence stopped in our community. So we have to come up with these solutions to these issues. And I know that during the week of Race First, discussions leading up to the Race First rallies, these are things that's in the forefront of a lot of these organizers' minds, because they're going through it in these cities, and our children is facing the brunt of a lot of this. Any comment before we kind of wind things down tonight, brothers. Anybody can say something in reference to it, or just say something in reference to whatever you want.
Brother, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, because I was listening to Professor Smalls. I believe he was on a podcast a few months ago, but he spoke to what person that was. You know, I don't know who that was that was in that clip, but we talk a lot about the purge, right? And we talk about how, and there's another purge movie coming out. And we talk about the messages from cinema such as that and the impact, the predictive programming and all those different things that are aligned with it. But what we're seeing right now is an epidemic purge. Forget COVID. We're dying at a higher rate by the young bodies dropping in the streets. And it's something that we'll look back at this. You know, we'll look back at this generation to come and we'll realize how many souls were snuffed, how many people were lost, how many fathers, mothers, because how many young children were taken out of here, you know, by our own hand. And, you know, I speak to the fact that we owe the generations previous, you know, we owe them. Because no matter what happened during this war or us in our community, we folded and allowed a lot of it to sort of like happen in front of us. I'm not saying we willfully did it, but we lost this battle in this part of the war. We lost it. We have to regroup. And it's on us to pay. We talk about reparations. It's on us to provide reparations for the generations that come behind us, because we owe them the right to a future. And a lot of people don't realize how much damage we inflict on them. I talk about it all the time when I say the young brothers that I see at the gas stations, the young brothers that are asking people, can they carry their groceries to their car? I see the vitriol and contempt that we, members of our community, treat those children with, not even stopping to think about why are 10 and 11 year old children out of the gas station trying to pump your gas at night? Why are these children hanging out in front of a supermarket all day, not even thinking to ask them why they're out there? And when we have conversations with them, the children say, I just want something to eat. And we deny them that and the dignity of allowing them to earn it honestly through us. And then 5 years later, when they get tired of asking us, and we feed them enough of that contempt, they reciprocate tenfold. And that's what we're seeing out in these streets right now. So we owe that future. And that's why we have to build on this policy of race first. Asha.
You know, Brother Oba Finney in Pine Bluff raised something earlier when he talked about doing things that the people can see, that he felt as though he needed to get out here and show some things so people can be attracted to it. Because, you know, being that we in a this Western society where it's always predicated on what you have and the things you're doing, and you don't even have to be positive in the community. You could be doing negative things. But if it's out there and people see it, some people are attracted to it. So I understand clearly what you're saying, Brother Oba Finney, about putting a clean glass out there, so to speak, so that people can be attracted to what you're doing. And when they see the positive things happening in the community, then they can get involved with it because they can relate more to it. You know, some of these other ones that they put out in front, whether it's these celebrity politicians or these celebrity artists, or even some of these celebrity sports figures, you know, that's something that our people can't attain. They can just look at it in awe. But they can't attain that. And some of these people don't want, and I'm talking about some of the people that are involved in it themselves. They don't want everybody attaining it. They like that so-called celebrity status where people are looking up to them. See, we just can't afford, because we're in a battle now for our lives. And we got to think of strategies to fight back. We do. I mean, what you men are doing is clear. This is a clear strategy. And it's very necessary. So I think that just like this thing has spread to 4 to 5 cities since the last time when we had Baba Imhotep on and Brother Oba, we see that it has spread to other cities. Before next year, it's going to spread to other cities. And more people are going to get involved. And more people are going to come up with strategies to fight back. And I'm just on this thing because we've had men on this program with black political parties that they've been pushing. In fact, one of them is in the Baltimore area. So we have to control the politics in these communities, especially communities where we predominate in the population. We can't have these assimilationists as heads in these communities because the people are not going to benefit. You got, for example, Pine Bluff. It's no different than Philadelphia. Philadelphia got 1.5 million, the fifth largest city in this country, and poverty is off the hook. Homelessness is off the hook in black communities. Unemployment rate, the job with teens and adult black males is off the hook. I mean, Richard, you know it. You know some of these figures. We got to do better, or we're going to see this stuff happening and spiraling out of control in these communities. I'm just happy to what you men are doing because, listen, being an organizer is a skill. I've told Brother Oba this on several occasions. It's good meeting you, man, even if I'm meeting you over the phone. Being an organizer is a skill that can be taught to other men because some of our people, they're good at looking at the thing and speaking about it. And some of our people critical of others about it. But it's different when you're out there doing it. It's different when you're organizing. You got to think on your feet. Think of ways to attract people. Think of things to say that's going to tickle people's interest. Listen, we see what Malcolm did for the Nation of Islam. I mean, the Nation of Islam was there and it was helping people. But Malcolm, with his skill to organize, took them to a whole nother level. So I'm just saying that having skillful organizers is key. That's why this man made a concerted effort, especially in the late 60s, early 70s, to kill a lot of these men that were skillful organizers. He knew that that was the public enemy number one in these black communities.
Yes, sir.
So I just want to say that to you, man, before we start winding the discussion down. Richard.
Yeah, I think I'm really pleased also with the work that you're doing, especially around this. And as and I have to check y'all, you know, hold me in check. As a dues paying UNIA member, Division 121, I believe I'm still up to date. Just hearing the concept, and I really respect brother, the brother from Maryland pushing this effort. I'm really glad to see this, and I think that this is an encouraging moment for what you're doing.
Brother Oba, you still there?
I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here.
Go ahead.
Basically, like I said, this is just. I was listening to what many of my brothers were saying a little bit earlier, and I totally agree with everything that brothers were putting down. There's really not much to say, and you know, when the brothers, you know, are coming with that type of energy and that type of heat and that type of fervor and you know, disseminating the truth, I would just say this, that
I take a line from my brother, Brother Bomani Mayasa, from the group, hip-hop group, United Front. He says that white people don't, when it comes to dealing with us, white people don't deal in fractions. They don't deal in fractions. They want complete control of everything. If they have a pie, they don't want a slice of the pie. They don't want a third of the pie. They're not satisfied with a half of the pie. They want the entire pie, the crust, and if they could, they damn sure would have the container that the pie was in. They want it all. And to speak to what you were saying as far as people being assimilationists, my idea, and this is something I spoke with Brother Carl Tone Jones about a week ago, he and I always have great conversations. That's my brother. We were talking about the idea of reform. Many of our people are not assimilationists. They're reformers. They want reform. And for many of them, it's not any fault of their own. Many of our people just want white people to treat us better. Case in example, just a few weeks ago was Juneteenth. Juneteenth is symbolic. It's a symbolic gesture, okay? But it's at the end of the day, even if it's symbolism, and it's something that I think that we as a people should recognize, should honor, should celebrate, and understand in some senses that Juneteenth did not give us, it gave us freedom from chattel slavery, but it did not give us sovereignty. It did not give us complete autonomy and power and destiny and control over our own destiny. We have to understand that it was given to us as a symbolic gesture, same way Martin Luther King's holiday was given to us as a symbolic gesture, same way Black History Week, which has now become Black History Month, has been given to us as a symbolic gesture. It's not substantive. And we need substantive results. We don't need reform. We need revolutionaries on the front lines for African people. Better yet, we need retributionaries on the front line for African people. And this is what we're going to talk about and elaborate on at the Race First Rally on Saturday, August the 28th. And it ends on July 5th with with our inaugural National Race First Awareness Week through July 31st, and then a whole month will pass, because the reason why Baba Imhotep put National Race First Awareness Week and strategically placed it this day, he deemed it our time, it's our week. We didn't get permission from anybody. We don't need anybody's permission to establish a Race First Awareness Week. Okay, we say that we declare this last week in July as our week of Race First Consciousness, which leads right into Black August. And we all know, each and every one of us on this phone knows the significance of Black August, with various different events that happen historically amongst us as African people, not only on the continent, but throughout the diaspora. You know, events such as African Independence Day that'll be taking place virtually this year on Saturday, August the 7th, the same day in which Johnson Jackson was killed. Through the entire month of August, leading up to that last Saturday in August, when we will have our Race First rallies in various different cities, five different cities in all, on Saturday, August the 28th. The time is now. This time is our time. We have to seize this opportunity in this moment. Our people are in trouble, and we are on the ropes right now, and we got to fight our way off the ropes. And this is so necessary. It's so essential. It's so important. I am so proud to be a part of this movement that will become not only a national movement, but an international movement. I'm very, very proud to work with these brothers.
I'm very, very proud to work with Baba Imhotep of PLM, and definitely happy to be a guest of yours tonight. And I also want to acknowledge our brother, Brother Diedrich Biggs from Gulfport, Mississippi, who could not be with us tonight. He is the organizer for the Gulfport, Mississippi Racehorse Rally that will be taking place there on August the 28th at 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock p.m., it will be taking place on Saturday, August the 28th in Gulfport, Mississippi. So for those individuals who are in that Mississippi area, please contact Brother Diedrich. I'm sure you can find him on Facebook, but definitely contact him and get involved with what is going on there in Gulfport, Mississippi. It will be taking place, yes, at 19th Street Community Center, 3939 19th Street in Gulfport, Mississippi. The zip code is 39501, and it will start at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time in Gulfport, Mississippi. Once again, shout out to our good brother, Brother Diedrich Biggs, the organizer in Gulfport, Mississippi.
Brothers, listen, I want to thank you for your work. Brother Oba, Brother Carlton Jones, you know the door is always open to you. You are here in the city and you're around. Brother Oba, you're not in the city anymore, but you are still around.
No. Actually, I'm back. I'm back. And brother Elliot, if I can ask Brother Oba Feeney and Brother Mike to talk about the time and the meeting place for the racers rallies that will be taking place in their respective cities on the 28th of August. What time will they meet, the meeting place, so forth and so on. Brother Carl, if you want to, we'll actually say, we'll tell people where we're going to meet at in Philadelphia as well. But I just want them brothers to talk about the central location that they'll be meeting at and where it will all be taking place on the 28th of August.
Brother Mike, you can go first.
Okay. We will be meeting at Maloney Park, located at 1701 Joyce Avenue in Columbus, Ohio. The zip code is 43219, 1701 Joyce Avenue, Columbus, Ohio, 43219. At Maloney Park on Saturday, August 28th, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Brother Oba Finney?
So we'll be in Townsend Park here in Pine Bluff. That's on the north side of town, right by the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. We'll be starting at 1 p.m. and we got a few things we got planned out for everything to happen. So from vendors to speakers and so on and so forth. So we got quite a bit that we're working on, that we're planning. So, but yeah, we'll be in Townsend Park. That's in Pine Bluff.
Before I go to Professor Carlton Jones, Brother Oba Finney, being at the colleges there, is a lot of students involved, or have a lot of students reached out to you, maybe from the Black Student Union there at the school, or just students in general?
Right now students still kind of out on summer break.
Okay.
So, but by the time the rally happens, they'll be back. So we're definitely looking at doing some promotion and just sharing some flyers. I think Baba Imhotep got some more promotional items, so some wristbands, some physical flyers we're gonna put out in the street as time kind of grows closer. So we definitely want to get some of the college students involved since it's so close. So yes,
good. Before I go to Professor Carlton Jones, let me got a call here. Let's go to 505. He might want to say something to you, man, before you go. 505 in Albuquerque. Are you there? Let me put them back on hold. Professor Jones, tell us where it's going to be at in Philadelphia.
Well, we're going to start off at 52nd and Girard. That's going to be the gathering spot. Although I believe we said 1 o'clock, right? And then at 1:30, we're going to march down. Well, not march, but we're going to do our walk down Girard Avenue to 59th and Girard to Carroll Park. And then from Carroll Park, we'll commence with, you know, the ceremony, the libation, and the rest of the program. We're still sorting out some minor details, but for the most part, everything else is sorted. And we're waiting to hear back from a few folks because, you know, we have some people in mind to that we would like to assist us in some of the program, the details of the program, such as drumming and the libation part in particular. But so we're working on that. But in terms of the actual starting point and where we end up, we're going to go straight down to Girard Avenue. And, you know, that area has been through a lot. So I know it'll be good for them to see us out there in mass, you know, promoting that African-centered race first power that, you know, that's lying deep from within.
Again, thank you, brothers, for your work. And Brother Oba,
thank you, brother.
We'll be in touch. And Brother Mike and Brother Oba Finney, I'll be in touch with you also because, you know, the door is open to you, man. I want to get updates on what's going on in your particular areas. Let the Time for Awakening audience know what's happening, and we'll go from there.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, brother.
All right. Be in touch. Thank you, brothers.
Thank you. Thank you. DB Fodier.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Race first.
All right. Richard.
Yes, yes.
I'm glad all the men was with us this evening. It gives all of our people a perspective on what's going on, the think tanks going on in all these cities, and the necessary work that's being done. I mean, these men are out there in the vineyards, man, and they're talking to the people, and they're organizing people. That's the key. They ain't just talking. They're doing work.
And I hope the Time for Awakening audience, as more and more, you know, men and women show themselves in the work that they're doing, recognize that, you know, the type of support we can be able to give, you know, to be able, from our different vantage point, to make the work easier for them. I mean, we may not be able to be there, but there's other things, even if it's, as one of the brothers said, you know, providing the spiritual energy to help, you know, to push the wind that would make their sales in that, or as you say, that difficult and skillful challenge of organizing a little bit, move a little bit smoother through this rough water, because this is rough water, but compared to just acknowledging their existence, if that makes sense. Because it's all of us that has to be involved in making the work, you know, lifting this load.
Listen, we come to the end of another program. Before we go this evening, tune in tomorrow, Saturday, from 7 to 9. The Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins will be broadcasting from 7 to 9 on Time for an Awakening Media. And then join us Sunday in conversation because we're scheduled to have Dr. Cynthia McKinney with us in conversation on Sunday. So just mark your calendars. It'll be always a lively discussion when Dr. McKinney joins us in conversation. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Such a small part of the things that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman.
Children.